Hello and welcome to episode number 62 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
I am Robert Rosenthal.
We're excited to be back here in our studio inside the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning in the Armory on the campus of the University of Illinois, which Robert is starting to look a little more like a campus again.
I mean, I never thought I'd be this guy, but like just driving around looking for a parking space here. It was, we are in flashers week, a bunch of cars with flashers on, a lot of dads.
I'm very glad you defined what you meant by that. Wait, a lot of dads, what?
Yes, a lot of dads are on campus. Folks, it's flashers week. So I drove down Armory to get to the Armory. Funny how that works out. And there were like three vans, a station wagon, an Outback, and another like vehicle just with their flashers on. You know, there's a car coming the other way. You can't get around it, that kind of thing. So, yes. I mean, it's not even officially moving yet. Like the freshmen don't get here. Dorms aren't open yet. But it is time to move into apartments, dorms, and sororities and fraternities. That's where we're at.
You know who else is here already?
The band.
The band is here.
Band is here.
Band is here. As I came into the Armory, the Flag Corps is rehearsing here indoors.
Well, I usually watch for that, like, first video of Barry directing the next band. Has that been released yet?
Haven't seen it yet.
Might be
coming out soon, but we'll keep an eye out for it. But yeah, the official start for classes is not until a week from today, Monday, the 24th. But there's signs out. Move-in is starting. Speaking of flashers, the flashing traffic lights are off. It's back to red means stop, green means go. Yellow watch out, you better speed up.
And we are in that week of I'm driving by sororities this morning and they're filming their like recruitment videos, I guess, the ones that go viral of like there's just a whole bunch of people in the front yard screaming and a bunch of cameras and this and that. So it is, I never thought I'd be the guy that notices how different campus becomes. I'm not the get those students out of here, it was nice when it was quiet, but it is certainly different this week than it was last week.
I mean, ample parking was nice, I'll say that.
Ample parking, flashing lights, never waiting for a red light. Never worried about hitting a student on a scooter that zooms into the middle of the intersection.
Otherwise, we welcome the students back for a brand new year.
This is their place.
And you know what that means? It means that football camp, training camp, fall camp, preseason camp, however you want to label it.
Wish it was camp ran too.
Oh, my gosh.
Stop the clock. How quickly did I say the word camp ran too? Yes.
Let's you and I go to the Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
Get some wood so we can build a bridge so you can get over it.
Never, ever, ever. I still once a year drive by the fields. If I'm up that way, I'll just drive out to the fields just to stand and look around. Dead serious. I've done this like the last 3 years. Just look around. Just
not surprising.
Stand in the fields.
Not surprising.
I miss it so much.
Nonetheless, though the access isn't what it once was, there are things to be gleaned, and you have gleaned, so we will get into that. We also have eye lights, and before this is all said and done, we are going to welcome in here Stephanie Record. She is now the outgoing coach of U of I cheerleading. She is retiring from that position, but she is also the head of Crisis Nursery here in Champaign, which, as many of our viewers know, is the charity of choice for the winner of the long jump bet.
Who won the bet, Scott?
I won the bet. And thanks to you all, and to you, Robert, there's been more than $1,000 donated to Crisis Nursery. So we're going to hear a little bit about Stephanie's journey with cheerleading, and we're also going to learn a little bit about the Crisis Nursery. But we got football camp to do that. And speaking of flashing lights and lights that don't flash and just need to be turned on, let's do it. Let us
light the eye. Ooh, baby.
Good to be back here. Our last episode was over at the Smith Football Performance Center, and we talked to 8 of the players, and we also had Chicago Media Days where we talked to 3 more football players. So we've talked to about 10% of the team.
There you go. 11 out of 105 or whatever it is.
If you missed any of that, head to the other podcasts, including our last one where we talked to some football players. But we will talk the football part of camp here coming up. But first, it's our highlights.
Let's do it.
Maybe insert some highlight theme music here if we can ever come up with it.
Maybe we should write some. You could perform it on the trumpet, maybe?
Maybe to the theme music. Highlights, do-do-do-do. Anyway, let's start with actual Illinois competition that has already happened. Illinois soccer hosted number 19 Georgia and played to an exciting 0-0 tie. That's called a draw in soccer. And afterward, it actually seemed like the players and Coach Hultin were fairly upbeat about the proverbial or the old, well, we didn't really win, we didn't really lose.
Mm-hmm. Here's the funny thing. When we wrapped up at the Smith Center, you went over to the soccer game. I was loading stuff into the car. As I was loading, you can hear the loudspeaker. Is Mike Kuhn the announcer for soccer? Who's the PA for
Michael
soccer?
Michael Kaiser.
Oh, Mike Kaiser was the announcer. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I heard 4 different foul on Illinois, foul on Illinois. So my observation for this game I did not watch is that we played a bit physical against Georgia, against number 19. Would that be accurate?
I'd say so. I mean, I am going to be right up on the cusp of knowledge, expertise, analysis of soccer.
Mm-hmm.
But Katie Hultin told us here, we are going to play physical.
Mm-hmm.
And they press. They're aggressive on defense. And I think the defense, for the most part, did a fantastic job. You hardly complain about zeros, right?
Mm-hmm.
But didn't convert offensively when they had some chances. And I think Georgia's saying the same thing. I think they're probably all both looking at it, like, well, we did a nice job on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one, I would say, defensive bust. And then you have Izzy Lee in goal that mm-hmm. really helped things out. So I think there's probably, for the first match of the year, you probably say, hey, I'll take it against a top 25 team.
Yeah, draw against number 19 all day. Take it.
All right. Next up, honey, let's go ahead and get the marble top counters.
The marble top counters?
I don't know if Devin Witherspoon is married and considering some interior decorating or kitchen redesign.
I see. Yes.
But Devin Witherspoon can now afford the marble countertops if he wants, because he's getting paid the richest cornerback in NFL history. Over $100 million guaranteed, $132 million contract.
Insane. Last year, Kirby Joseph signs the largest safety contract in NFL history. I believe it's been passed by someone who signed a contract this offseason. But this year, another member of the 2020 Illini secondary that gave up 400 passing yards to Graham Mertz in Wisconsin is now the highest paid cornerback in the league. The talent in that secondary, we'll call it the 2022 secondary because that's when it had everybody, but the talent in that secondary is insane. I guess 2021 even, you know, with Kirby back there with Spoon and Sidney Brown and Quan Martin in the second round draft pick. It's just, it's crazy.
Now, yeah, I understand this. I was talking to a friend who lives in Seattle, where obviously Witherspoon with the Seattle Seahawks. Take what, and I know for folks who are listening in the Chicago area, the cost of living in Chicago is a little bit higher than is here in Champaign. So just take the Champaign number and think about, like, well, what salary would I kind of need to make my ends meet in Champaign?
Mm-hmm.
You got to double that for Seattle numbers. So just know that Devin Witherspoon, $132 million, is really more like $66
million. Yes, I'm sure he's going to have to be careful with... I mean, what a... Like, It's just an astronomical number.
I know.
Right? I still remember as a kid, as a Cardinals fan, Cardinals baseball. Yes, I used to follow the sport. When Ozzie Smith signed a contract for $3 million a year, and I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard in my life. Like, how can anyone afford to pay someone $3 million a year? How is that even a thing? And where are we now? What's his yearly on that? 30,
oh, I don't know.
$2 million? 33
it's,
million?
It's a lot of money.
It's just insane. It's yeah. unbelievable. Here, I'll tell a story. I've always got a story, right? This will be quick. Put me on the 90-second clock. January of 2023. NIL is a new thing. I was writing an article about NIL event in Chicago, which was 10 football players got on a bus here in Champaign, went up to a bar in Chicago, signed autographs, hung out with fans, watched Illinois. That was the Matthew Meyer, Terrence Shannon team. Beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin, watched it on the TVs there, hung out with fans, drove back. I got to ride on the bus and write about it and tell the story. On the bus on the way up, there were some new mock drafts that had come up. Spoon had just had a workout or something, and like something had him like eighth or something like that in the draft. And so the players were looking up like, wow, like if he goes eighth, that's something like $9 million a year or whatever. You know, and they just the thought of, they were so excited for their teammate and what it would be. And now here we are 3 years after that, and he signed a contract for 30 something million a year. It's just so crazy how he can go from where he was to here. How'd we do?
You had 20 seconds to spare.
I'm getting better and better and better.
You could start, you know, writing for a paper or something.
Yes, I could maybe put 25,000 words into a Illini football preview or something.
Luke Altmaier. Remember him? Whatever happened to Luke Altmaier? That was all the way back in last December that we last saw him play football.
He was on that bus.
he's now with Detroit, and he got significant snaps in a preseason game. Luke Altmaier actually threw a few picks there in an NFL preseason game, but did also throw a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. I think it would be like impossible to get out there your first time wearing an NFL helmet and like, hey, kid, you're going to get, you know, our backup quarterback retired. So you're basically going to get every snap here. And that would be a rough one. But good luck to him.
That's always it. Oh, does that mean I have a shot to be the starting quarterback? No, it means we're not letting the starting quarterback touch the field in case we're going to let you mm-hmm. get smashed by a charging defensive end.
Mm-hmm. It's all because of Trent Green and Rodney Harrison. Shout out St. Louis Rams 1999. The Rams are going to play Trent Green. They put him in there. Rodney Harrison rolls up on his knee. Trent Green tears his ACL, out for the year. They have to play the backup, some guy named Kurt Warner, and they won a Super Bowl. That's the end of that story.
All right. On to the preseason hype that comes with top 25 polls. AP top 25 came out today. Illinois is not in it. That is not a surprise, but I think most people would put Illinois in the, hey, we're watching you because we might want to put you in there. It just depends on what you do, but we're not going to do that right now. Ohio State is number one. Oregon is number two. Then Georgia, three. Notre Dame, four. Texas, five. And good old Indiana is number six. I saw a note. This is the first time in a while, if not forever, that an SEC team has not received a first place vote. That doesn't mean the SEC teams are bad. It just means everybody who thought this is the number one team in the nation voted either for Ohio State, Oregon, Notre Dame, Indiana, or Miami.
Miami got votes and Georgia didn't? I didn't
for
see that.
First place, yeah.
For first place.
Yeah. Miami got one vote.
Mm-hmm. From the Fort Lauderdale. I'm just kidding. Probably was, but those are the days when the local reporters had to put their team number one. I have no reaction to that
okay.
because it doesn't include the University of Illinois, and I don't care about anyone else. I do care, but I don't care.
Okay.
All I know is we play number one, and we play number two.
Here's what you can have some solace in, then,
mm-hmm.
since you find these polls to be meaningless. You will also find then meaningless to be that last year, what do these teams have in common? Penn State, Clemson, LSU, Arizona State, Illinois, South Carolina, Florida, SMU, Kansas State, Iowa State, Tennessee, and Boise State.
All ranked preseason but not ranked postseason. I would like to once again raise why we were not ranked postseason. We finished 26th. There are a couple reporters who I won't name by name here that had certain teams way ahead of Illinois, and it was their points. It was two very specific reporters. It was their points that kept us from being number 25 in the final poll. So I am going to say those are the teams that were not ranked, with an asterisk right there saying Illinois should have been ranked and was ranked in the coaches poll, but wasn't because of two very, very lazy journalists.
But the rankings come from the votes, so therefore...
Right, but they didn't update their votes after the bowls, and they had teams that got destroyed in their bowls ranked higher than Illinois, and it bothers me that they're just like, just send in the last poll, cost us a spot, and put us in that stat. Everything's got filters, orange and blue for me. These glasses right here, it's all I see.
Yes, I'm familiar with your myopic, what do you call it?
Myopic.
Your myopicness?
Myopathy.
Myopathy.
Illini myopathy.
Yes, I'm familiar, but just take heart that just because you're in the top 25 right now doesn't mean you will stay in the top 25. But
yes,
Pat Forty noted that 19 of the last 22 years, the national champion has been in the top 7 preseason rankings.
Except for last year, right? Because wasn't Indiana like 19 or something like that?
I don't know.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't think Indiana would ever be a national champion. That's weird.
Oh, yeah. It could never happen.
Well, let's find out. Will Illinois defy expectations? It all starts with the work you're putting in right now. We're gonna talk camp, Robert's favorite time of year, right after this. Light the Eye is brought to you in part by Logic Coworking. It's Champaign's home for co-working, an ideal workspace in a bright and welcoming environment where members can enjoy 24/7 access to best-in-class amenities. Find your focus in a workspace designed for you to be inspired, connected, and supported. There's monthly memberships available, or you can just stop in for a day pass. Enjoy those first-class amenities like fast Wi-Fi and free printing. And there's discounts for students. Located at the corner of St. Mary's and Neal in Champaign, it's Logic Coworking, supporting Light the Eye. Just for a little bit of context, heard from Barry Lenny Jr., Illinois offensive coordinator going into his fifth season, had... Among the comments he had, this to say about how Caton Hauser is doing in taking over the offense as quarterback and how he's approaching adding new wrinkles, new plays, new scheming, what have you, with the offense.
Oh, I think his command of the offense is excellent. I think if you watched him practice and watched him listen to him practice, you would think this is a guy that's been in this system for a long time. It's been really impressive how he's embraced that. Art's done a great job, and Mike and Coach New have done a great job with all those guys of – you know, getting him the information. But Caton's really taken it upon himself to work hard to master the offense. He's got an incredible mind, and he's in total command of what we're doing. Total command and total perfection are not the same thing. You know, like he's totally in command of what's going on. He handles everything super well, which gives you a chance to go execute. You know, if you don't have the mastery and the command of the terminology, the communication, then you got no chance when the ball snapped. And so I really like where he's at from the mastery of the communication, and I think he's had a really good fall camp for us.
Where you have added new wrinkles or schemes, as you mentioned, what's driven that mostly? Is it personnel, new personnel, or just creativity?
Yeah, I heard somebody say this at a press conference several years ago, an offensive coordinator, head coach, I can't remember, and it kind of put it in context for me, and I talked to our guys about this. Listen, our offense is a living, breathing organism, you know, and if it's not growing, it's going to die. And so we always are trying to feed new facets, new schemes. And yes, it is tailored around what we're doing this year may be different than last year because of blank's skill set. You know, it could be the quarterback, it could be the line, it could be the tight ends, it could be the receivers. So that's always our job to piece that. That's the fun part of my job. And the challenging part of my job is like, it's not cookie cutter. You know, what worked last week doesn't work, you know, maybe the next week. What worked last year doesn't work this year. But on the flip side of that, there's a lot of things that have been done that have been tried and tested that are true that we're going to continue to do, that are staples of what we do. So, yeah, we're just always trying to grow and breathe and feed our offense and make it become alive and have little tentacles and, you know, whatever that visual is, you know, to be able to attack people with and to move around and to be pliable. You know, that's the part of the fun part about being an OC.
I think the number one theme about this football team, maybe you see it differently, is just questions. Not skepticism questions, but just a lot less, a lot fewer knowns.
Yes. I think the biggest thing is you can just look at it in returning players. Last year was the most returning players in probably a decade. From 2024 to 25, this year is probably the least since, I haven't done the exact numbers, but probably since 2017, something like that. You know, just straight up stats from the two bowl games. From the Citrus Bowl to the first game last year, 18 of the 22 starters were back. And from the Music City Bowl to the first game this year, we don't know exactly who will start, but it's either going to be 7 or 8 starters starting a game the next season. So from 18 out of 22 to 8 out of 22, that's significant. That's very significant overturning the roster. That's very doable now when it used to not be because of the portal, and you can go out and get experienced players if you don't have somebody ready, but it is still a huge turnover.
So from the handful of times that we've gotten to see the limited action, individual drills and for the most part, very little action from scrimmage outside of special teams. You want to start with position group by position group or more general thoughts on the offense?
I think we could start with general thoughts. Yes. First, people need to understand that what we're seeing when we're allowed to go into practice is at best, the most offensive anything we would see would be some pitch and catch between quarterbacks and wide receivers during indie drill. In individual drills where you go to your position coach and you're working out with that position coach for 10 minutes before you come together as a team, right after stretching, that type of thing. So there is no football that is being observed. So there's not really, we're not really able to come back to people and say, like, boy, Hauser to Colin Dixon is sure a connection, because all you're seeing is that connection in a, hey, go run this route with no defender on you. Hey, quarterback, go stand there without any pocket or anything else, no rush coming at you. Throw the ball to him. And they're just working on routes and timing and that type of thing. So that's all we get to see offensively. You could see a running back tuck the ball high and run through some cones. You can see a tight end hit a blocking sled. You can see the offensive linemen line up and hit each other while, you know, the freshmen pretend to be defensive linemen and that type of thing. But we're not really watching football. So it's hard to say, like, oh, the line looks pretty solid, or, wow, what a great crop of receivers or anything, when that's all you're seeing. There's intentional behind that. They don't want a bunch of practice reports out there saying, whoa, new wrinkles for this. And I understand why they do it. But it's hard to evaluate, which means this whole offense and team is hard to evaluate, because it's really difficult to know how they're going to play together. Look, Jake Renfro looks great when he's hitting a blocking sled. You know, this left tackle from Colorado State, Christian Martin, that's what a Big Ten left tackle looks like. How will they all play together when you put a JUCO, you know, Micah Matillo, in between them as the left guard, and how will they, you know, switch off a stunt and communicate with each other? We don't know anything yet. So I just want to make that general statement of, like, even though the offense returns a fair number of receivers, tailbacks, and, you know, even a tight end or two, and you know, the names are going to be more familiar than the defense, it is still a, man, we don't know much until they go live against UAB.
Yeah, and the fun is you get to learn a lot from that first game, and actually maybe you only learn some of a lot, because presumably you hide some things against UAB.
Sure, yeah. I think it'll be very vanilla as long as they're winning the game And like a friend of mine and I were joking the other day of like, what if they came out in the most basic 4-3, nothing, boring, bland defense? Just to play with people. Everybody's like, 3-3-5. What's the 3-3-5? How you doing? You know, what if they just came out and said, all right, we're going to use a practice defense against UAB, and then we're going to, you know, debut the real thing against Duke. You just don't know. You just don't know much until you get out there in the games you're really trying to win.
Well, position-wise, offensive line, a group that collectively has experience in college football but doesn't have experience together
yep.
in games yet.
Yes. I thought that Coach Bielma's comments in Chicago at Big Ten Media Days were very like people were caught up in him and the whole quote about like SEC still thinks it's 2005 or whatever. And then Stuart Mandel asked him to clarify that statement. And in what he said, he was talking about that, but he also said as part of that, you know, his follow-up to the follow-up, which was if this was 5 years ago, Christian Martin is not at Illinois. Jake Renfro is not at Illinois. These guys are picking other schools, and we have an option at them because NIL has leveled the playing field and helped those players no longer just look at their offers in terms of, oh, I got a couple SEC offers, I'm going to pick one of those two schools. It's where can I play, but also where are they offering me the most and who can offer what? And that whole thing has leveled the playing field for those kinds of transfers. So I thought it was very, he even included Nathan Knappick in that, who'd started one game last year, which would indicate, wow, that kid looked good. There's probably some schools coming along saying, hey, jump back in the portal. We could use a tackle like you, son, you know.
They wouldn't say that because that would have meant he had to be in the portal.
No one ever tampers. So it's just very interesting that his point he wanted to make was, this is not an offensive line I could have had any other year except for maybe the last 3 or 4 years where they want to play here, they want to come here, they are willing to sign with us, I guess is the best way to say it, now in this new era. And it's, you know, it's not good for Colorado State that they lost Christian Martin or they lost linebacker Robert Edmondson to Illinois, but that's how this works now. There was that stat, I think maybe Phil Steele referenced it, that of his MAC first and second team, it was something like 72% had moved on from last year. If they had eligibility left and they made his Mid-America Conference first or second team, they moved up a level, you know, last year. And this is how it works now. It's just how college football is. And so, yeah, it's a talented line. How will they play together? We will find out on September 3rd.
Well, behind him is Caton Hauser, and you heard the comments from Barry Lunny Jr. that he likes the command that he has of the offense. That doesn't mean perfect execution of the offense, but he feels very comfortable back there. I mean, in Indy Drill, you can see that Hauser does have that quick release.
Yes.
If you could clock it, it would be a little quicker than Luke Altmaier's.
Yep.
Will the accuracy be there? Will the doesn't throw the interceptions be there? And I guess right there with it is the receiver room right now has had a lot of guys wearing green jerseys. That means guys who are injured and cannot take contact in practice.
Yeah, I think the passing game, I was just saying this to somebody a few hours ago, like, I don't think Hake Beatty dropped a pass last year. I don't think he had a single drop the entire season. I don't, you know, Luke Altmaier completed, what, 67% of his passes. Which is a crazy high number. There's an Illini fan base used to, when you need something big, you have a quarterback who will throw a dart and you have receivers, not just Beatty, but others who will catch it. So that's going to be hard to replicate for, you know, it's a tough act to follow for Hauser and for Jayshon Platt or whoever the number one receiver is. It's just really hard to find those connections. But yes, it is. again, it's like all the stuff we're talking about. We're so spoiled by last season. One of the best Illinois offenses in the last 20 years. Was able to get the yards. Maybe didn't run the ball like they wanted to, but Altmaier solved so many problems, especially late in games, of just, he was just so calm. I was rewatching the final drive of the Music City Bowl again, and it's just so funny. The funniest part of that is when he, you know, they had the get him to jump off sides on 3rd and 6 and make it 3rd and 1, and then we'll convert that 3rd and 1, kneel on it, and kick the winning field goal. And as soon as the two guys on Tennessee's defense jumped and they snapped it, he did this like arms up in the air, like spinning around, laughing out loud kind of thing. Like, oh, they fell for it. You know, like he was having so much fun out there of like, okay, I'm going to pull him off sides right here. We're going to get 5 more yards. Then we're going to hand it to Fagan. He's going to get at least a yard on 3rd and 1. And then we can kneel on it, and then we can kick the field goal. There was just such confidence in that offense, and it's going to be interesting to see if this offense can develop the same.
Nope. Worthy, I think, is that the second center, the backup center behind Jake Renfro, appears to be TJ McMillan, mm-hmm. and at last practice I was at, he was snapping to Carson Boyd, which indicates that Carson Boyd might be the bona fide backup, which would not be a surprise, given that he's the only actually guy in the quarterback room that was on the roster last year. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, who's the backup?
Mm-hmm.
I would guess, emphasize guess, that it's Carson Boyd.
Yeah, and, you know, the coaches have said Michael Clayton is in that competition. He's definitely looks like a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a legit 6'3", 6'4", you know, heads taller than the other guys in that room. He looks the most like a college quarterback kind of thing, but he's a true freshman, so who knows how he's picking up the offense. Look, we've learned from this staff so far, both Lunny and Bielma, that they will lean toward the quarterback that's going to make the least mistakes, that's going to command the offense, that's going to, I mean, part of that is why they switched from, I mean, this wasn't Lunny, but in 2021 they switched from Peters to Sitkowski for that reason. If you remember, like halfway through the season, when they got to that Penn State game, Sitkowski was named the starter for the rest of the season. They were just switching quarterbacks, and then he breaks his wrist in that game and Brandon Peters started the rest of the games. But they emphasize those decisions. So I feel like the backup quarterback will go to the guy who makes the best decisions. This is a coaching staff that hates turnovers and that hates like bad mistakes of like dropping a snap or this and that. So they will trade off, you know, whoever has the best command for maybe the guy who will make the least mistakes. I think Hauser is obviously clearly the starter, but for those two guys, I think it would come down to the fewest mistakes and not so much who has shown out the best at practice.
Is there an element to overthinking this whole thing when you just go back to, well, new quarterback, is there the same connection with the receivers? Are they all healthy enough? Where's the depth in the receiver room? Just run the football.
Yes. I think that's the best observation you can make. If this offense is going to be successful, we're going to be sitting here in November saying, like, man, I didn't see 1,400 yards coming from Khalil Valentine. Like, I didn't know that this left side of the line with Christian Martin, I didn't know it would be this good run ball. They finally unplugged the running game and blew on the plug and plugged it back in, and it worked. And this is really, you know, has that last year was a passing offense. This is a rushing offense. That would be the best news to come from here, because this kid is really good. Valentine could be that kind of, I mean, how many times have we had a third year back at Illinois have this breakout season, right? Mendenhall did it. Mikel LeShore did it. Chase Brown did it. Like, you get to that third year in the system and it's like, oh, light bulb, everything's green, let's go. You could absolutely see that this year. Or you could have a healthy Aiden Loughery come out of nowhere and have a great senior season. There are options here, and you know, if they could unplug, that would open up so much for this offense. They could figure out the running game this year.
it feels like in this day and age, you can't be, I don't know what percentage is too run heavy, 60-65% play calls. It just doesn't. I'm sure there's somebody that at some level, or you know, maybe Iowa is still going to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you have to be balanced, any coordinator will. But it just felt like last year the pass set up the run instead of the traditional run sets up the pass.
Somebody asked me on I think on our Slack channel for Line of Borden, they'd asked me what I'd said something about how good Valentine looks like in uniform. Like he's really filled out to like that's a running back frame now. Skinny kid when he got here, but Tank has done his job over the last 2 years. And so somebody asked me, like, well, what's the comp here? Give me an Illinois running back he looks like. And I'm like, honestly, this is going to seem like recency bias, but he looks like Chase Brown. So I went and looked it up. Chase Brown, his senior year was listed at 5'11", 205. Right now, Khalil Valentine is listed at 5'11", 205. So he has reached that, like, speedy guy who's got a little bit of bulk on him. And can maybe bounce off some tacklers and do this.
Was it Chase that went full vegan also?
I don't remember. Was it Chase Sydney? Or Sydney? I don't remember.
One of them did.
Yes.
I was like, how can you? That's not fair. That's yes. Not fair. I'm going to have my salami sandwich.
That's right. That's right. So it's that's the yes. If there is no running game, last year that was probably the struggle of the offense. They just couldn't, even in the games against the smaller opponents, they just couldn't get the running game really unleashed. And that's going to be the thing. If they can balance off, take some pressure off the passing game, really get Valentine going, it could be that kind of season.
And finally, the tight end room. You don't have Tanner Arkin there anymore. Caden Fagan moves from running back to the tight end room. Be interesting to see how he's actually used because it does not sound like he's a number one pass-catching target, but he has done that. But that seems to be Christian Abney, but they keep throwing Devin Stoffel's name out there. Heard Will Valla. He's a freshman. His name mentioned as well, and you've got a – Maurice Smith Jr., a vet in there too. Mm-hmm. Abney seems to be the number one guy.
I think so, yes. That slowly developed over last year. I think in the first six games, obviously Arkin was getting all the snaps. I would say in the first six games, Stoffel got the majority of like number two, number three snaps, but then in the second half of the season it was Abney. And so they're looking to him to carry that forward. And be that guy. Again, as I always say about tight ends, way more important in the running game than the passing game. You know, you need a sixth guy who can block. You know, last year Cole Rusk had some great catches, but because he wasn't the blocking guy that they needed, he transferred to Arizona where he can basically be a receiver kind of thing. Like they need somebody who's going to block well, like Tanner Arkin did, and maybe Fagan can pick up that side of things, or maybe he's just a pass catcher. But Abney's probably the one that can do both.
Well, be very interesting to see if Illinois is, let's say, plus 500.
Mm-hmm.
Start there. Start with that. What will offense look like? And maybe we're getting into season preview territory, but I guess it all connects to what's going on in camp right now. But we just don't know what's the bread and butter, what's the identity of this offense. And maybe Brett Bielema and Barry Lunny Jr. don't know what it is, too, until 3-4 games into the season.
Yeah. The thing I have my eyes on is I want to see who emerges. There's so many new players. Like, who becomes that, like, ooh, he's special. So remember Colin Dixon a couple years ago. He had redshirted, but then as a freshman on that 2024 team, he started 10 of the 13 games. And it was this, nobody was talking about Colin Dixon. Even in camp, there was no, like the coaches would mention his name, but he had redshirted. He wasn't like the top recruit from whatever. Illinois had flipped him from Wisconsin, and everybody was happy about that, but nobody knew much. And then by the end of the season, it's like, man, we have like Mr. Dependable here at receiver. He is that kid who, you know, makes the block when you need to make the block and makes the catch when you need the catch. And this is an impressive redshirt freshman, and we've seen him grow, and I think he's going to be even better this year. If they get that from a Braden Trimble or they get a freshman running back like Barnett or Wheeler. It's like come out of nowhere, like, wow, I didn't know we had that weapon on offense. Or maybe one of the tight ends you just mentioned. Or maybe there's a, you know, wow, Nathan Knappick is he our best right tackle in 8 years? You know, if there's those players emerging, then this offense could get really exciting. Also, that's the thing we're watching.
I'll be curious too. What does Eddie Casper do? He's a transfer from Illinois State. He can be a specialist, but he has that slot. Maybe he's wearing number 80, but he has that slot Hank Beatty-ish look to him.
Yep.
Maybe he's a guy that steps up from the FCS level. And yeah, when you need a conversion at 3rd and 7, I'll be right there.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even talked about any of the freshmen. Nas Rankin is one of the highest rated recruits in the last 10 years. Kenyon Olsen, they love Kenyon Olsen, wide receiver. It's really rough for a freshman to come in and like try and pass a bunch of older guys and get onto the receiving depth chart. We saw, you know, Braden Trimble redshirted last year because of it. But there's talent. There's talent out there in this freshman class. And it's kind of funny, right? Like, think back to a Love a year. We would have been sitting here in 2017, 2018, talking about like which of these nine, I think six of these nine freshmen are probably going to play a ton. So, you know, is this guy ready to be a starter at defensive end and all that conversation we would have had. Now we have probably the best recruiting class in 10, 15 years. And we haven't mentioned any of the names because, you know, older guys are better at football and it's really hard to crack the lineup for these freshmen. So, the depth is there. There, you know, we're sitting here talking about tight end. There's like three spots and nine options. Is it transfers? Is it freshmen? Is it guys who've, you know, been in the background for a while? And the hope is that a staff that has proven it can develop players can find that out of these guys.
All right, next time we'll talk some defense.
I have one question for you.
Go for it.
I was on vacation the first week of camp. You went to practice. What was your general vibe? Since we're talking offense, I just want to tell people, you're not watching any football happen. You're not watching even 7-on-7 with no linemen or 11-on-11. You're just watching some pitch and catch and some footwork drills and that type of thing. But just what was your general feel?
Honestly, I have a soft spot for special teams.
Yep.
So I'm looking there.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's just, it's not clear who's the number one place kicker and who's the number one punter. And I'm not even sure. They may be splitting up long snapping duties.
Mm-hmm.
But
like shorts and longs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, the special teams has the fewest percentage of plays, but there is so much that can go really right and so much that can go really, really wrong in special teams.
Yes. Yeah, so we saw that last year with those. I mean, the punt, the knee was on the ground and the, mm-hmm. you know, and all that kind of stuff that flipped certain games.
To me, place kicking wise, Machowski, for those who don't know, he is back. He was on the roster 2 years ago as a transfer kicker. He set the school record with his only attempt of the year.
He tried another one later in the season. It was like into the wind or whatever.
But yeah, he hit a 59-yarder at the end of a half against Central Michigan, I believe, and set the school record for distance. But it was obviously Olano's job. Machowski, or Chow, transfers to Washington where he kicked last year, and now he's back at Illinois. You can just hear the ball off his foot much more than Lucas Oseda, the other kicker.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to make them all. So I think he might have the edge at this point. But anyway, don't discount the importance of the punt and the place kicking game.
Yep.
And even the just kick it far into the end zone so they don't run it back game.
Yes, like a run back could flip a game like the bowl game almost did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There is you hit on the thing that's maybe the theme of the entire camp, which is there are competitions everywhere. Like last year, it was like, okay, well, who's going to start at outside linebacker across from, you know, who's going to be across from Gabe Akis and this and that? You know, like, okay, you got all the offensive line back, you got this back, you got this back. Okay, everybody, there's no real competition out here. This year, there's probably eight positions that are still if you ask the coaches, are wide open, including, as you said, kicker, including punter. There are probably 8 or 9 positions that the coaches can't tell you yet who their starters are. When last year, by this point, there was maybe 1 or something like that, you know.
Yep.
So it is wide, wide open out there. And look, it's crazy. We're not talking about the defense, but I counted defensive linemen today. I counted 18 guys working down there. And it was like, we have 3 DL spots, you know. We have a 6 deep here, you know. Like, some of you guys are on 6th string. The 15th or the 16th, 17th, and 18th guys. You know, so it's crazy to have this many players and also have this many unknowns, but that's what happens when you graduate a whole bunch of guys and flip the roster over.
Well, it's a technical matter, but the travel rosters this year expand to 80 players instead of 74, which means that's 6 more players that will suit up on the road. And you can suit everybody up at home, but usually you're not running past what your travel roster would be anyway, unless it's a blowout situation. And now with the new red shirts for now, there's no like, okay, well, we got to get them in or we got to hold them to 4 games. It's just play who we want to play.
Yep.
And we don't have to worry about eligibility.
Yep. Yep. It's I'll just say that, you know, they've done the thing where there are 4 guys who are technically out for the year, so they were able to replace them with 4 new players. And they also have these walk-on guys that are kind of grandfathered in that go above the 105. So there's still a lot of players out there on the practice field. They have maxed out this roster as much as they possibly can for all these competitions.
And the washer and dryers.
Yes, yes, uh-huh.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Stephanie Ricord. She is the longtime, kind of was the longtime cheerleading coach here for the University of Illinois. She is retiring, but she's also the director of Crisis Nursery. So we're going to talk about life on the sidelines and doing good in the community. Stephanie Ricord next on Light the Eye. We welcome to the program our guest, Stephanie Ricord, who for 32 years was the head coach of Fighting Illini Cheerleading. She is stepping down for that position and will, though, continue as the director at Crisis Nursery. So we are glad to have her here to talk some cheerleading and also about the good work at Crisis Nursery. But the reason that Crisis Nursery is a topic for us here on the podcast is, Robert, do you want to remind the folks?
I mean, just play the clip.
We'll just go right just back to it. Episode 56. Somebody here said he could long jump 10 feet, and this is what happened.
Gosh.
So in honor of that, we also have this, you know, that Kendall gave you here.
Yes.
Maybe I'll just leave that here.
You'll leave it there for the episode?
Yeah. Okay. In honor of that, very generous people, that the bargain here was is that you would donate $77 to a charity of my choice, which happened to be Crisis Nursery.
Yes.
And but because there's many generous people in our audience, it more than 20, I said earlier in the podcast, more than 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Stephanie Ricord here says, and you've just told me it's more than $2,400 has been raised for Crisis Nursery.
It is. Those donations just kept coming in.
Yeah. Well,
so, it's amazing.
I didn't know how this whole thing was going to go. So I didn't tell you. And in fact, it was after the fact I called you up and said, hey, Stephanie, by the way, you might see a little bit of donations flowing in. Hope this doesn't freak you out.
No, it was great. We saw them coming in right away.
Look, well, I'm happy to humiliate myself for charity anytime.
Well, good. We can do that again.
Yes. Let's figure out other ways to.
It's all about the kids.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. I did jump. I face plant for the kids.
I do want to, Crisis Nursery does great work, and we can get into that, and folks can give still if they want. But as coincidentally, you're also the outgoing cheerleading coach for the University of Illinois. So congratulations on the career that you've had since 1994.
Since 1994,
yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you've been asked more than once, but how do you encapsulate what this has been like?
you know, it's kind of a surreal experience to step away from it after it being part of my life for so long. But, you know, when asked how many people have come through the program, there's just no way for me to even really know that. It's just been so many year after year. So I think that it's just been a great experience. And I can't remember all the years and, you know, all the different things, but there's great memories throughout. And so it's been a life's work for me.
Your life's work kind of coincides with certainly when Robert was in college and when I was in college. Mm-hmm. He was in the early mid 90s. I'm late 90s, early 2000s. So you've ridden the valleys and the peaks here that we've seen in Fighting Illini athletics.
Yes, I definitely have done that. I've been here when we were like 1-10, I think, in football. And then I said, well, it can't get much worse. And then we went 0-11, I think, the next year. So I didn't say that anymore. But it's nice to see us all on the upswing of all the sports. And it's been just really fun to experience the last several years, for sure.
One of the things that I always am impressed by cheerleaders, among other things, is when you're 0-11, you're smiling, you're excited for the team, you're supporting, as well as when you're going to back-to-back bowl games or you're going to an Elite Eight and to a Final Four.
Absolutely, and I think that's the biggest part of their experience is they're there from the beginning of the game to the end, even if the stands clear out, and they're still showing that level of enthusiasm from first quarter all the way through fourth quarter. So we train them that way, and they come in that way and are just so enthusiastic about being Illini fans and supporting athletics.
How did you get into it back in 94 or whatever? Like, how did you decide to do this?
Well, so I cheered here for 3 years when I was an undergrad. So you couldn't cheer as a freshman. They didn't have tryouts for incoming freshmen at that time. So I cheered 3 years here. And a year after I had graduated, my coach had retired or resigned and the position opened. I thought, oh, I'll throw my name in the hat, not really thinking much of it, and ended up in the position and have been there ever since and have loved it every step of the way.
So that puts you in the category. So you were a student, when did you graduate? 93?
93.
Okay. So you've been in this building before.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific armory memories? Actually, were practices in here or, you know?
We've had a lot of practices in here. And yeah. So we used to come in here just with our, they're called stunt groups, but with our partners and stunt just on our own. Kind of, this was a place where we could do that freely.
Sure. Yeah.
And then we've had practices here as recently as last year.
Really?
In the armory, in the nice, cool space that yes. we have. So I think that I am familiar with this area. I had classes in here. It's a unique building for sure.
It's funny because we'll ask guests and like, you know, Tom Michael talked about when we used to register for classes out
yes,
here.
Yes, that was
stand
me.
Stand those long lines. I did that as a
yep,
student. And,
yep.
And, you know, others are like, oh, it's the track facility. And others are like, oh, man, I was in ROTC and we use that building all the time.
Yes.
So, just so many memories. A lot of people getting lost in all the weird stairways
yes.
and everything else. But
you do have to go up the right way.
That's right. You have to pick the right stairway. That's the armory for you.
I saw that when you started, there were 18 people on the cheerleading squad. I feel like there's more than that now.
Yes. So when I was cheering and also coaching, it was just co-ed. So it was a co-ed team. When I cheered, there were just 18 of us. And gradually over the years, all girl stunt groups and cheerleading has become more popular. And in Illinois, they compete more in the high school level. And we really didn't want those cheerleaders to be excluded from the program, so we were able to grow our team by adding those groups as well. And I think it's really, really enhanced the overall program in general. And the more we are asked to do, the more bodies we need to cover those things. So you know, during basketball season, we're covering both men's and women's basketball and also football at the same time when all three are going on. So when we're traveling, we're kind of sending people different directions as well. So it's nice to have those extra people.
Athletics is year long. I mean, there's obviously football and basketball are what people think of first, but what are the demands put on the cheer team members?
Well, they have kind of one of the longest seasons, I say. So they reported here last week. So we had a group come in on the 12th, the new members, and then the other veterans came in on the 14th, and they'll be here now through when classes start. And they don't really finish up until after basketball season's over. So they go straight through. So they're driving back and forth doing the games over Thanksgiving break and Christmas break. They're here doing games over spring break. It's a year-long commitment, really, for them.
Yeah, and I should say you are retiring from your head coaching position, but you're helping the transition right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Michaela Gaylor is the new head coach. She just started, and fun for you, she cheered for you.
Yes, it's been really fun. I've really enjoyed watching her step in this week and really kind of take the reins on coaching the team and getting acclimated to the position. And I think that my support for her will largely be behind the scenes with a lot of the administrative things. I was kind of a department of one, running all those things on the back end as well. So I'm just really excited to have someone who cheered for the program and was passionate about the program and passionate about the sport and cheerleading in general. And she's a local. She's from Oakwood, Illinois, and has loved the Illini since she was a little bitty girl. And I think she'll be here for a while. And I'm just thrilled. I couldn't pass it to a better person.
Okay, so I have to ask, because cheerleader coach at Illinois is in a unique position, that there is one competition each year that gets focused on by the fans, which is the Liberty Pose.
Oh boy.
At the Bragging Rights game against Missouri. If people aren't aware, first time out or second time out of the game, they will bring out a number of, it's usually what, 3-3 of this. They go into the Liberty Pose, which is the male cheerleader like holding the female cheerleader up, and whoever stays up the longest wins. And it often comes down to, like, they'll drop, and there's just one and one left and this and that. So how much is, like, prepared for that? I mean, I guess it's not a thing that if you're at Kentucky or if you're at, you know, Louisville, right, or whatever, that there's not this, like, hey, we've got this competition every year, and it's a big deal to the fans. How much is prepared for that, or how does that fit into the whole thing?
Well, we've really challenged our co-ed guys to prep for that. So, unfortunately, it's just a co-ed competition, so our all-girl groups don't get to compete in that, although they did during the tournament, I think. We had one competition, and they did really well. But we really kind of challenge our guys from the beginning of the season to start working on that, and our flyers as well, because they also have to maintain that body position throughout that stunt and not balance or wobble. And it's harder than you think to hold that same position for for that long, and one little look to the side or, you know, any of that, then it's coming down. So we really we've done, you know, pretty well there for a while. I know Sean Harrington always would talk about how if we would win the Liberty contest, the team tended to lose the game, and vice versa. So I think we've overcome that, you know, curse, and we've done both before, and it's been okay. So now we're all trying to win.
Yeah, and is sad that I know his name is Luther Solis. The best Liberty Pose guy ever. Like, he won 2 or 3 years in a row.
He would have
probably... And he didn't look like he was even shaken.
No.
Like, he could have gone another 20 seconds or something. Like, he was the guy.
Yeah, Luther and Jada actually was his partner. And I think they would have had a three-peat if it wasn't for COVID.
That's
so
right.
They lost that final year because they couldn't compete that year. But they were a great couple to have out there, and just great people in general.
And I did a story on him at the time, and he even pointed to her. He's like, you don't understand, like, somebody who can hold as still as possible or keep their weight centered over your hand is the key to the whole thing. He's like, so I'm nothing without her keeping her weight totally centered and not putting any stress on me.
Yep, they were a great team for sure.
That's great. Okay, I've always wanted to ask the Liberty Pose question, so I've, you know, there's a bucket list item for me.
Awesome.
You don't understand how much it means to this man for Illinois to beat Missouri in anything and everything.
And me.
I grew up in St. Louis area, so it is everything to me.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me too. That's one of my biggest things. I don't want to see him come down, and I'm always the one that's probably like, oh. Just a couple more seconds, we could have had it.
Yes. It usually comes down to that.
Yeah, it really does.
Well, the other hat you wear is the director of Crisis Nursery in Champaign. actually, how's the facilities in Urbana?
In Urbana, right? Champaign County. Yeah. So we serve.
You tell us about your work there, what the services of Crisis Nursery. I can attest, there's some people in my life, my orbit, that have benefited greatly from Crisis Nursery.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have two passions, right? Illinois and cheerleading, and then I have Crisis Nursery and helping children. So I've been the executive director there for 18 years, and it's an emergency facility that cares for children ages birth through six whose families are experiencing any kind of crisis. They can stay for up to 3 days. The average length of stay is about 8 hours. And we can serve anywhere from 10 to 12 children at a time, depending on staffing. And we always have children overnight, so we never close. We're there 365 days a year on holidays. And it's a great resource for the community. I think one of the lowest barrier resources, there's not a lot of red tape. Anybody can use this. It doesn't matter what your income is. We have, new families moving into the community without support that have called. A lot of professors even have used us when they first moved to the community and didn't know of anyone and needed that extra support as well. And so it's a unique service for sure.
Yeah, and crisis is in your title, but that doesn't mean somebody is in an emergency of life or death.
Correct.
Although it could be the case, right? But it
could be, but yes.
It's more than that. You just mentioned, hey, a professor really just doesn't have anywhere else to turn right now and needs some childcare.
Yes, I think that one of the biggest things we're focused on is preventing a situation that could lead to abuse or neglect. So we do a lot of job-related care. We also provide care for families experiencing homelessness. A lot of times those are the overnight hours that we're providing. It could be domestic violence. It could be a medical emergency. The biggest reason people use this is just high parental stress, just really needing a stress break and being a safe place for their children to go is the nursery, knowing that if they were not able to get that break, it might not be the safest situation for their children. So we just really want to be there to support families as much as possible so they don't end up in a situation where a child might be harmed and then DCFS might get involved. So we're really there on the front end.
From the putting on my fire engine hat for a moment,
absolutely,
we're going to be part of with Engine 77 part of an event this weekend. I believe it's at Carl
at the Fields.
I believe it's from 9 to 1 on Saturday.
It
so
is.
Tell me about that. This is called. It's one of those events where kids can come see construction equipment and medical or emergency equipment, things like that. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it's been a popular event we've had the last several years. It's sponsored by Deuce Construction, and Austin Ducey was on our board for several years and helped kind of spearhead this event for kids. And so there's construction trucks, just all kinds of trucks. It's, we call it Touch a Truck, but it's farm equipment. It's, trucks and buses and all the things. We even have the helicopters coming in at different times as well, which is always a fun thing for everybody. And so it's from 9 to 1. Mm-hmm. We also know that loud sounds can be, challenging for some children. So 9 to 10 is a sensory hour where there's no horns going on, there's no lights. It's really sensory friendly for children who need that. And so first thing in the morning is the best time to come for that. And it's just really a great opportunity to get out, and the weather looks like it's going to be great. We're so glad it wasn't this past weekend.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a great day, and we're looking forward to having everybody out there.
Great.
There's a good portion of our audience that's not here in Champaign County, up in the Chicagoland area, and in Illini alums and fans near and far. Are there other crisis nurseries if folks are, hey, I want to support but want to help locally?
More locally.
What could they look for there?
So there's a Crisis Nursery Coalition of Illinois, and there's 7 of us currently. So there's a Crisis Nursery in Effingham, Springfield, and Urbana, and we are a standalone. We're all standalone agencies. And then there are 4 other ones that are under umbrella agencies. There's one in Peoria under Crittenden Centers, one in Chicago under Maryville Academy, and then there's 2 under Brightpoint. One of those is in Bloomington and one in Rockford. So we're really excited about having those in the state of Illinois. And I know there's a couple new ones that are looking to open up hopefully soon. So we'll be able to share that when those open.
Again, we're so delighted that our audience here has given nearly $2,400 to
amazing.
Crisis Nursery. And if you go to crisisnursery.net, you get the Champaign County
Correct.
Crisis Nursery. You got you got ownership there on domain.
We do.
Like, so crisisnursery.net, if you're like, oh, hey, I did mean to give, and it's not too late. You're always looking. Is there anything
else? Always take donations, yes. Yes.
Is there anything else that Crisis Nursery would benefit from you know, volunteerism or donation?
I think we're always looking for volunteers. It's a great opportunity now that students are back in town to really kind of check us out. We rely a lot on student volunteers during the year when they're here, and they really help support our staff in caring for as many children as possible. So we do provide those opportunities. I think that a lot of student groups on campus and even in the high schools and middle schools, elementary, will do different drives for us for like snacks. I know STM does a big diaper drive for us during their homecoming week. Just a lot of different ways that people can give back that doesn't have to be monetary. But those challenges in the schools are fun.
All right, Steph, we'll let you go here, but what are you going to do first football game or that first time that you're not required to be on the sideline? Where are you going to be?
Well, I'll be at the first football game, but the first one I'm not required to be at, I'll probably be in the stands checking that out, seeing how that feels. And then if there's a blizzard, I'll probably be at home. I was not able to do that last year.
Oh, you didn't have to do it?
No, I had to be at the game the whole year. That's why I couldn't stay at home last year. So, yeah.
You know, I don't remember. Were the cheerleaders on the field?
We were out there the whole game.
Oh, that's great.
God bless you.
That's great.
It was something.
Yeah. God bless you.
I told him that was a memory that nobody else has had, for
sure.
That's
right. That's right.
Stephanie Record, congratulations
on
a great career. You've been a pillar, a huge part of the Fighting Illini community, and you're doing great work here with you and your staff at Crisis Nursery.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stephanie Record with us here on Light the Eye. Well, that made my day.
Yeah, that was great. That was seriously great.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions.
100%. Like, my goodness. Like, just because I'm being an idiot. I feel bad. Like, as we're doing that, I'm thinking, like, man, I had a charity, too, and I really screwed that charity by falling short. We're going to have to come up with another one of these so I can pass it and get the money to my charity.
What if I jumped 2 feet? Hey, everybody, would you give if I jumped 2 feet?
Yes. Yes. It'll have to be something else.
We'll find something to be charitable about here in the near future.
Okay, good.
Or you know, it'll come around again.
Yeah, we'll
it'll come around again.
Yes.
You had something here before we went.
I was just looking it up. This is so dumb. I looked up how long it's been. I was watching some of these students move in. I was watching some of these parents with their flashers on loading kids into their apartment. Took me back to my ears. I just realized that we're coming up on 35 years since I moved into Forbes Hall, which doesn't even exist anymore, which was torn down and replaced, 10 years ago now, probably. So I looked it up. Yeah, it was August 28th was my first day of classes in 1991. So as of, 10 days from now or so, we're going to be reaching 35 years since I moved in. And it's just such a... I don't know. It's such a moment in life, right? Like just watching these parents carrying laundry baskets into apartments and dorms and fraternities and sororities and everything else. It's just such a thing, right? You know, like there is nothing I can picture that day. Can you remember the day you moved into campus?
Like, vaguely, yeah. I was one of the come early because I was in marching line.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I kind of had the dorm hall to myself.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even, you know, it was the whole, like, dad had us up at 6 to get there right when we could move into the dorm all that kind of stuff. And
laundry baskets full of stuff. And, you know, I had to bring all your CDs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we didn't use MP3s.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Can I tell you a CD story since you brought it up?
Okay.
The guys across the hall from us, a guy named Jerry, a guy named Steve, my roommate, and I lived freshman year with a guy I knew from high school, so we got a dorm room together. Brian and I say, hey, hi, we're across the hall from you. We're, you know, nice to meet you, Jerry. Nice to meet you, Steve. They say, hey, can we help you move your stuff? And they came downstairs. One of them carried CDs upstairs, and he was just flipping through them like as he's carrying them. August of 1991, for a little kid from Southern Illinois, all of my CDs were like hair metal. We're talking Poison. We're talking Motley Crue. We're talking obscure hair metal bands like Trickster and Kix. Okay. And so they are carrying these boxes of CDs like, who are these guys? Like, are these guys like stuck in years ago?
Now, I'd like, if you're listening or if you're on YouTube, leave it in the comments. What's the music you brought to your dorm? Your freshman year.
Did you have a Trickster CD in the collection? Did you have Kix, Don't Close Your Eyes on single? No, you didn't? Well, that's how it rolled in Forbes Hall in 1991.
Well, perhaps fittingly, it's coming through my headphones and yours also. Don't know if it's coming through our microphones, but right now as we're recording, the drum line is right outside the walls.
Yes.
Another season is going to be here soon enough. So that means next time we're going to talk some defense. And down the road, we'll be talking to Chris Thomas. He is the volleyball coach for Illinois. Mm-hmm. We've got some episodes here and more Illini sports coming.
And then the... what, students' first day of class is a week from today?
Yep.
Gosh, it's all coming here. It's all happening.
All right, we'll do all that. Once again, thanks to our guest, Stephanie Record from Crisis Nursery, and thanks to Eric Johnston for helping us behind the scenes here at the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning. Thanks to Logic Coworking and, of course, the U of I Credit Union. Hey, if you haven't done so, would you take a moment, please? It really helps us out to drop a review or a star rating in the app or to like and subscribe. It just helps the podcast grow. And we will all be together soon enough the next time we light the eye. Talk to you then.